720 WGN, it is Dane here with you, high atop Chicago Skyline Studio until 10 p.m. And we've talked about a number of different things, whether it is emergency preparedness, looking back on memories as we are on the eve of another 9/11 to remember and not to forget. And 312-981-7200, people are adding their thoughts and kind of sharing where they were, when, and if, let's say, that's not the one that they remember, if there's one of those kind of unique events that that everybody sort of remembers where they were when that happened. And one of the things that is happening, the kids will always remember, is their time going back to school this week. 300,000 students went back, well, sort of, kind of, not, but started paying more attention to Chicago Public Schools as they started remote classes. And what usually went along with that, at least for me, was a Speed Bunky lunchbox. And a sandwich, maybe a peanut butter jelly sandwich, maybe a bag of chips if I was lucky. Who knows what would be in there? But I don't know if kids are doing that, if they're bothering to go through the motions that are just raiding the refrigerator during the sort of the simulated remote lunch hour. We'll talk about that. Plus, you know, as a kid, one of our favorite holidays of all time was Halloween. And so we'll talk about Halloween 2020, and excited to have on one of the most exciting personalities in the world of food and food media. She is one of the driving forces at thetakeout.com. It is Marnie Scher. Marnie, welcome to WGN.
Thank you so much, Dane.
Well, I know you had a little bit of drama today. Excited to have you on here and able to kind of share your thoughts. And even at a time that is a little more sleep friendly, right? So that you can go ahead and kind of share what's going on. And so for you guys and your elite food force on the media side at the Takeout, what are some of those? I know that I was thinking school lunches. I don't know if you have any kind of romantic attachment to any of the things that you either had in a paper bag or a lunchbox or anything like that, just that kids could relate to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe this is dated to a very particular time in American culture, but I was definitely a Lunchables kid, you know, with the packet of the crackers and the cheese, and that was my go-to. School lunches, I think it's just like what ties us so much to our memories is food. And so it was like the one time in the school day that you were just allowed to cut loose and eat what you wanted and just be yourself, right? Who wouldn't remember that fondly?
Now, so on the Lunchable side of things, for us, we have them for our kids. And I feel as, because you seem to have sort of, you know, this attachment, and you think positively of those days with the Lunchable and the sort of segregated little food options and maybe some crackers and some cheese and some rounded, you know, meat bits and some other things that they may have in the Lunchables. There's a few different things to choose from. But I think of it as, like, I get them for our kids, and I think at first they sort of liked them, but they sort of just run through, like, what they either like or are tolerant of. And so now I feel, or they make me feel, and maybe we should just work through this together, that I'm being a bad parent by giving them a Lunchable, maybe because it's just too easy, right, to just hand them this prepackaged lunch.
Wow. I mean, that's surprising to me, because I remember thinking that it was like I was living in the lap of luxury having my Lunchable. You know, there were, but there's like a hierarchy of them, too, because there was the classic crackers and cheese, which was really good. But then, you know, the cool kids, oh my gosh, they had the pizza ones and the nacho ones. And of course, none of these really constitute a balanced lunch, but it didn't matter. It was just like the coolest thing to see at the other end of the table. Some kid had a Lunchable that you hadn't even seen yet.
Wow. Okay. So it was kind of like an action figure thing, like a collectible. So if you found a Lunchable that was rare, maybe exotic, and maybe have some value on eBay or something, were there any thoughts for the kids to just not open it, you know, collect it and just keep it so that you could maybe.
I think it has a built-in expiration date for that.
So now on the pizza one, and I'm sure a lot of listeners, if you have any thoughts on your favorite Lunchables, or what was your favorite school lunch, whether it was the bologna sandwich or now, of course, the banned and prohibited peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which is now, you know, no longer welcome, right? It's a persona non grata when it comes to so many lunchrooms around because of the peanut allergies. But for the Lunchables and the pizza thing, how did you work that? I always wonder but then sometimes I would just block it out. If it was the only one available and I got it for the kids and I would give it to them, and then I guess I would hear later that they didn't have the ability to heat it up or whatever kind of thing they needed. How did that work?
The question of how it works is that it works by being a thing that resembles pizza more in shape than anything else. It was a cold, obviously you keep these things refrigerated until you eat them, and so it was a cold circle of something between bread and cracker. It was sort of like hardtack. And then you apportioned a packet of cold sauce onto it and cold mozzarella cheese. And I think that was the intended way to eat it, which is kind of a gamble on behalf of the Lunchables company, because you're thinking, will kids eat this? But they definitely did, and they loved it.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing is, and you're part of the whole food media world, covering it and kind of reflecting back and giving thoughts and kind of helping people have that information, but maybe not on the marketing. So like the cold circle might not be the best thing to put on, like, it's a cold circle, in the commercial spot. Right.
Right. All you had to do was tell kids that it was pizza and they wanted it.
What is an acceptable? Did you ever do this because for our kids, like, they'll get in there and then they bring back their lunch and they don't have a metal lunch box that you could use as a weapon, I guess, and it had a thermos built into it. But the kids now, they've got got a Velcro thing and it's probably insulated in some ways. And so it's better, right? It's lighter. But sometimes they'll come back and we go to make them lunch the next day. And this, of course, is pre-pandemic. They haven't had like an inner action kind of lunch yet so far this year, and then there's like things that we don't give them, like, where did you get this, where these chips or these cookies? And apparently still there is this whole I don't know if it's sort of like a backroom gambling kind of situation where everybody sort of brings up, so what do you got, right? And then everybody decides, I hate this, you hate that, give me that, or I'll trade you one of these for one of those. Did you ever do that, or have you heard from any of your readers about it?
Oh, yeah, the trading, it's like a child's barter system. It's so nice to know that they're still doing it, because I guess it's the first way that kids can sort of exercise like purchasing power, right? Like it's their version of retail, their goods and services exchange. And so we definitely did that, and Halloween is a big time to do that too, because you don't get everything you want from your basket, or you have things that other people want, and then it's a matter of how cleverly you can leverage it. So if your kids are coming home with chips, they're very, very good at this bartering system. That's like gold at the lunch table.
Well, you wonder if it's shrewd negotiating or if it's just a charity system where there are certain friends of theirs that just feel bad for them because they have these lunches that either just aren't what they want or whatever. Somehow they're able to kind of manage and negotiate themselves into a better situation. We're going to talk Halloween because it is the main, we've got three kids and they do that whole, whether it's just outright trying to sneak somebody else's stuff. And a lot of the stuff is the same. I think that there is a team photo of acceptable candy out there, but then you get these wild cards, the popcorn ball, or maybe if you've ever had a can of Jolly Good handed to you through a screen. I mean, that's America, right? Where these other different situations, you come back with this bag of candy or many bags if you're doing it right. And what is it going to look like in 2020? So keep it here. We're going to have a Marnie Chiron from thetakeout.com. We're going to talk about Halloween 2020. Is it going to exist? It was always kind of scary, but what about this year? Keep it here. It's Dane on 720 WGN.
We get it almost every night, and when that moon gets so big and bright, it's supernatural delight.
720 WGN. It is Dane here with you until 10 p.m. and continuing our conversation with Marnie Shore from thetakeout.com, we are talking about food and talking about kids, of course, back to school now and one of the big holidays when it comes to kids and food. Well, I don't know if you call candy food, I guess, but you ingest it, and there are some that have sort of a nutritional value, I guess. But Halloween, right? And so, Marnie, welcome back.
Thank you.
So Halloween was always kind of a scary thing, you know, because you release the kids. And granted, I've never released them completely. You know, we're kind of following along or whatever. So it wasn't like the Halloweens that I'm sure some of the listeners remember, where they're just kind of, you know, left to their own to wander the streets and pound on doors. And because that's kind of what we did. So our kids don't do that. But there's still kind of a level of mystery and danger that's built into Halloween, whether it's the thought of the razor blades and the Snickers or the pins or you know, the local police department x-raying your candy for you, offering those services. And so it's always been a little bit dangerous. But I know Los Angeles, I guess they've canceled as much as they can. It's not like it's the Olympics, you know, or Coachella, right, where you can just decide to cancel it. You can tell people you're not allowed to do it. But talk a little bit about Halloween 2020 and what you're seeing.
Sure. Well, first of all, Dane, candy is very much a food. I make it the base of many of my meals.
So all right.
That's how I think of candy. But LA County first banned trick-or-treating outright this year, but then kind of walked that back, and now they are just strongly discouraging the act of trick-or-treating. And that's representative of what a lot of counties across the country are dealing with, is this big question of, you know, you've got this holiday. It is associated with small kids in tight-knit groups, getting into close contact with people crowded into front doorways. It's just not what we think of right now. It's kind of the opposite of social distancing. And so lots of places are struggling with the question of whether to allow trick-or-treating, whereas other people are pointing out, you know, it's kind of this big back and forth. Other people are pointing out that surface transmission, such as you would find between, you know, candy exchanging hands or taking candy from a communal bowl, is not necessarily a risk for COVID. And so then it becomes a question of, well, if the kids have their masks on and, you know, do things the right way, can this endure, this tradition? And other people are saying, why risk it, even if there's very little chance that they will contract COVID from this trick-or-treating? It's like, let's just put it on pause for a year. So it's just been a really interesting debate, because it shows everybody's inner feelings about the pandemic we're in and how they've been approaching it with their parenting. We have 7 weeks left to see where it all goes.
And there are a number of different sort of incarnations to the Halloween experience and the trick or treat experience and how kids can do it. And it really, and not related to a pandemic at all, it was just whether people were around or available, or even if, let's say, that they felt it was safe for the kids to just run around in particular areas, or you wanted to have a closer look on them. But I hear you, Marty, because if you have, I know my brother-in-law, that's all he does. He doesn't want to have that, you know, couple minute conversation every couple minutes and talk about, oh, you look nice or whatever, or fight with the kid over that's trying to take, you know, three king size Snickers. So he just has a bowl out, and they work the honor system, which for the most part kind of works, but usually somebody grabs like a whole bunch of them, but he doesn't care. He just throws more candy out. But this is the way that he does it. So if you do it like that, where you just have a bowl out on a lawn chair, you know, kind of a safe distance, 6 feet from the front door, I think that works. I'm kind of scared to let Halloween go and let trick-or-treating go, because, you know, kids, you know how when you're a kid, you know, 1 year seems like a lot of years. And I just think people will lose that connection to it. I feel like it's already kind of frayed.
Yeah. And there's been lots of, you know, for the kids who really want Halloween to happen this year, for the parents who want that for their kids, there have been some really interesting alternatives proposed for each of these counties. You know, you can either do what you're talking about, like leave the bowl on the porch, let kids go up one at a time to get the candy. Some people have joked that they're going to chuck the candy off the porch at the kids as they go by.
Yeah.
Another one that's kind of interesting is, instead of having the kids walk around the neighborhood and go to the various doorways, why not have the kids in their costumes standing in their own driveways, and then either local government or, you know, a group of volunteer adults can distribute candy, you know, kind of throw it out the sides of a car door or something, like you're at a parade, and then have the kids go get that. So they're having the candy brought to them, which is like a lazy kid's dream.
What? It's like the kid candy equivalent to the Mardi Gras bead throwing thing, right? I mean, it really is. The kids will be like reaching up and clamoring to earn the, you know, the Reese's peanut butter cup. Well, you could do some of these. So we've seen, and I'm sure, and if people have some thoughts, you can talk with Tom at 312-981-7200 and give your suggestions of whatever your community may be doing, and we'll bring it up. But they have, whether it's in a parking lot, let's see, they call it like trunk or treat, right, where the kids just will wander from car to car, and then there'll be, you know, offerings there, so they don't have to walk up and down the street so much. They can keep it sort of in a controlled environment. So I think if you did it in a, you know, use the sports playoff bubble philosophy and just have sort of a Halloween, you know, trick-or-treat bubble, and then have everybody get their COVID check and then be inside of a large gymnasium or something, going from booth to booth, kind of like a trade show, maybe that would work.
Yeah, you might have to give it a different name, because a trade show doesn't sound too exciting to a kid. But yeah, I mean, you know, anything that gives the kids the excuse to wear the costume and eat a lot of candy is going to go over well with the kids.
So do you think it's going to be left up to the communities? Of course, oftentimes they'll err on the side of safety. You can understand that. But this is a huge economic engine, and you know the kids like it. So they're dangling out the shiny object of the costumes, certainly the candy, you know, and all of that. But they're starting, you know, it's been since August they've had some of these Halloween superstores pop up. And so I don't know that market forces would allow them to just forego it entirely. Have you seen that, where whether it's maybe it's the candy manufacturers, I don't know if there's a higher purpose that they're working on, or certainly the costume people, I mean, they can't miss a Halloween.
No, and in fact, Hershey released their Halloween candy lineup 4 months ago, because they just didn't want to wait. They said, let's get the new products out the door now and get people excited, and then they'll have plenty of chances to buy them, whether or not they're going to engage in Halloween traditions. You know, this way, those products are on the shelves, and people will happen upon them in plenty of time. And then if they buy them for Halloween, great. If they don't, they still got a lot of chance to taste the new stuff.
Certainly, I think the costumes change on a regular basis, to, you know, whether it's Power Rangers from back in the day or whatever the, you know, the Marvel superhero is for today. So you always have that. But it seems like the candy situation, like there is a big, you know, the big candy lobby has had a stranglehold on what that team photo of acceptable candies is. And so, Marnie, tell us a little bit about it. Like, who is it? Is it all the same things? You know, your fun size or your king size, if you have someone that's generous, and hopefully you are, Snickers or Reese's or the Three Musketeers. Or is there any kind of trends that you're seeing? You know, you had those people that would make the Rice Krispie treats. We always, you know, as kids, we wouldn't get to that till, I don't know, January. But, you know, people tried, right, to make their own things.
That's right. And, of course, now that is not done as often, because you can't make things in the volume that you can buy things from, like, Costco, for one. But also, you know, because of the decades of, like, you know, urban legends and everything about the razor blades and the Snickers, people are a little more wary of homemade stuff. But as far as what's going on in the candy world, a lot of it, I have, you know, they haven't said this outright, but my suspicion is that a lot of the new designs of candies are built with things like Instagram in mind, right?
What?
They're very photogenic. They are not just new flavors, but they're new presentations of old flavors. One example of that is the Reese's Franken cup. It is milk chocolate. It's like, if you're looking at the Reese's cup from the side, from the ridge side, the top remains typical brown chocolate. The bottom is bright green cream, which doesn't really have a flavor on its own. It, for all intents and purposes, it's going to taste like a Reese's cup, but it's half green to show you that it's like Frankenstein.
Well, that's cool. They've got to try to put themselves, you know, out there and try to, you know, create a little bit of product diversity too, because otherwise people will just buy them the day after or whenever they can and get them on sale and then save them. So if you've got sort of these time specific and kind of designer candies, I think that is really cool. Before we go to the break, I wanted to ask you too, sometimes there, you know, there's the flavors, you know, whether it's everything's pumpkin spice, right? Or let's say there's like sriracha flavored candy. Are there any flavors that have been, you know, become hot, that have kind of worked their way into that Halloween conversation?
Well, pumpkin spice has kind of wriggled its way into the conversation, just because pumpkin spice has wriggled its way into everything in our lives. but yeah, the mixing of fruit and chocolate seems to be a little bit on the rise. Hershey's is also coming out with a vampire kiss, which is full of strawberry cream inside. And we saw that with Valentine's Day, too. Lots of strawberry cream. I don't know why this is the moment for that, but maybe people are finally willing to accept fruit mixed with their chocolate.
Of course, it's resembling, like vampires, when you think about it, you really break down what happens in a vampire situation. I mean, I know zombies, that's gross too, but what is the romantic attachment with the vampires? Because they're busy, first off, they're undead, I guess, right, typically, and then they're biting you, and, you know, they're doing the whole blood, you know, I just don't know that sounds appetizing, I guess, right?
We have the Twilight books to blame for that.
Let the listeners know we're talking with Marnie. Sure, she is from thetakeout.com, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into some of the things that are kind of new and different with some of the restaurants we know, love, and go to all the time, all year long, whether it's Panda Express and kind of morphing into that candle thing, right? So we'll talk about that. Also, one of the places, it's Vivian, so we've got, it is, her birthday is coming up on Saturday, and for, I think it was 5 or 6 years straight, Buffalo Wild Wings was the only place that she would go to, partly because they came out with a, I think it was like a dynamite stick candle that did sparkles, but also they were real tolerant of the whole present opening. They did a sort of a clappy clap thing, and so she loves it. So we'd love to hear a little bit about that too. So we're going to continue our conversation with Marnie Scher from thetakeout.com when we come back. And so keep it here. It's Dane on 720 WGN. WGN. It is Dane here with you until 10 p.m. tonight. I wanted to remind people, coming up after the next break, we're going to have Brenda Russell Williams with her new groundbreaking initiative, My GPS. It is going to, I think, it's going to revolutionize a lot of the way that people are thinking as far as, you know, kids and potential and ways to approach things. It's kind of out of the box in a bunch of different ways, and excited to have her on a little bit later on in the program. And on the line with us now, as we demystify the world of food, we've got Marnie Scher, and she is, of course, from thetakeout.com. Marnie, welcome back.
Thank you.
I always, you know, you think, you know, you're already one thing to one person, or one thing to an industry, or one thing to a customer base. And when some of these companies sort of extend out, I imagine what that conference room is like when, you know, Larry has an idea and it's at the KFC board meeting and he's like, how about we get into fire logs, right? You know, we're going to have original recipe fire logs and everyone's going to love it. Well, who doesn't love the smell of chicken? You know, I mean, so why wouldn't you just get into all of the incarnations where smell is a factor? And so now I guess Panda Express, So I know this was on thetakeout.com. So Panda Express is kind of breaking into the, is it the world of candles and which flavors? How are they going to do this?
Yeah, you know, it's Panda Express is like so many chains right now, getting into just swag and merch in general. The Panda Express swag shop has t-shirts, hats, socks. Like you said, there's a candle that smells like, what flavor is it? It is honey sesame chicken. And it's going to make your house smell like Panda Express, like you just ordered Panda Express, which, you know, I would just order Panda Express, but you can have this beautiful, the candle looks beautiful, so maybe it'd be a funny gag for someone who's a big fan.
Is that really what it is, Marnie? Is it just a novelty? Is it just a funny gag? Like, oh my gosh, you're like, Bob always, you know, he orders Panda Express, so we're going to get him one so he could smell it all the time, because it seems just basically like unsatisfying, right? Because isn't that part of, like, it smells good and then you're eating it, right? It's just, I don't know, it would just seem like there's just something lacking, like the food, if you just have the candle.
Well, and I would be interested to compare the candles at various fast food places, because more than one of them have done this. There is a candle set that has McDonald's. It was a limited time thing because I think it sold out quite quickly. The Big Mac there was a candle set, and each candle represented like one part of the sandwich, like one element of it. And so like these candle sets, I guess everybody's always looking for housewares to send their friends, and if you know that they're a fan of one of these brands, it's a no-brainer.
Well, I could see that. Okay, so the candle that appears that looks like, you know, it's shaped like an apple. You light the wick. It smells like apples and cinnamons. I sort of get that. You know, but I think that still kind of factors into the novelty side of things. And maybe that's all it ever is and all it ever should be. It's just another fun way to kind of enjoy some of those brands. Do you know, do they see them as just conversation starters, just to be out there? It's like, hey, that smells good. I've never had Panda Express. What's going on here? Maybe I'll order the real thing. Or are these real kind of revenue streams for them?
You know, I think it's both. I think it certainly doesn't hurt for their customers to become walking billboards, right? like we were talking about earlier with photogenic chocolate, these items are beautifully designed in a way that's going to make people want to post online about them and, you know, pose for selfies with their Panda Express hat. And so there's that part of it. And then it's obviously like a very profitable thing for them to sell a $15 baseball cap in addition to a $10 entree. You know, people might be more willing to pay higher price points for this merch. And also, in, you know, restaurant businesses, the profit margins are so thin that offering something with a bit of a better profit margin like merchandise and apparel could be a really smart move to sort of diversify their revenue streams.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So they're thinking it's a tight business. The restaurant business is tight all the time. One of our favorites, I mentioned it, Vivian, our 8-year-old, like her favorite place to go is Buffalo Wild Wings. And I don't know, it's because that they've stood their ground on whether it's the names or for the boneless thing. But I had never really thought of it. They call them boneless wings because they're not boneless, but then they're really not wings either, right? They should just go straight nugget. But I guess they're fighting this, right?
That's right. There was a bold political statement made last week that kind of went viral on Twitter. Basically, there was this guy who stood up in Nebraska and spoke in front of the government about renaming boneless wings because it's such a misnomer. I think that it was probably a bit of a performance on this man's part. But he said that they should be called buffalo-style chicken tenders or wet tenders or saucy nugs or anything
saucy
except
nugs.
Wings.
That sounds like a nickname or something. Hey, saucy nugs, what's up?
Well, I mean,
they do have like the different things. So, I mean, because I was writing them down. So nuggets, right? That's an acceptable tender, which is different, right? It's bigger, less sort of rounded, maybe more oblong. Then you've got the finger. And granted, that's, you know, not correct. Chickens, at least no chicken I've seen has fingers. And even that sounds unappealing, right? Who thought maybe it's shaped? I don't know. That should, if anyone's going to fight something, let's get chicken finger out of our vocabulary.
Yeah, it's kind of got the same issue with it. And as he points out, he said, we already have a word for chicken nuggets. So why are we trying to market these as something different? Which is a point that I kind of agree with. I mean, they're not wings. They're basically nuggets. But they, you know, just call them something different and sell them with a different sauce on them and it's suddenly a wing. I think it is a silly convention that cropped up. But our food language is full of silly conventions that don't make any sense, you know? There's a dish called City Chicken that's actually pork nuggets.
What?
There's no chicken in it at all, but we're allowed to call it City Chicken because that's what we call it.
Oh, there's so many more fights out there that just make so much more sense. But, you know, I get it. If you're going to try to, you know, maintain that street cred on the wing side, right, you know, your Buffalo Wild Wings, you're not just Buffalo Restaurant or Buffalo Cafe. There's no buffaloes there either. But so maybe you want to do that. And so if you want, you know, a boneless version of their boneless wings and they still have the same sauces and rubs on them, you just call them boneless. And, I, you know, kudos to them for sticking to it. It's all kind of crazy, but it's kind of fun, right? Who would be the guy that would go to court with that? Who's got time for that? If I'm his significant other, his family member, where are you going, Brad? He's like, I got to go down to City Hall to fight the wing boneless nugget battle. And he's like, don't you have anything better to do? I guess not. That's America.
But, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings couldn't be happier about the exposure, and then they get to make a very public statement defending the product. Everybody wins.
Yeah, you wonder if he's really working for those guys. I'm not jaded and cynical like that. But if people want to get more information about this controversy and so many other beloved things and trends and tips and topics in the world of food, so Marnie, fill people in on what they find when they go to thetakeout.com.
Sure. Thetakeout.com is a website that Our tagline is Food is Delicious. It's a site that wants to celebrate food, no matter where that food comes from. We are just as excited about fast food as we are about gourmet food. So we're going to teach you how to make things. We have recipes. We talk about beverages. We have an advice column. Anything you can think of related to food, we want to talk about with our readers. And we get very engaged with our readership, and we get into fun arguments like, is a hot dog a sandwich? And we just have a lot of fun. So we want our readers to have fun, too.
Where do you come down on the patty melt side? Because that's always been a contention.
Like, is a patty melt a burger?
Yeah, is it a burger? Is it a sandwich? Is it just based on the bread or basically, what is it?
It's delicious.
All right. See, there you go. I think that's one thing we can all agree. And we'll have links up at WGNradio.com for that, the takeout.com. And Marnie, last thing, are you guys going to be covering Chicago Gourmet at all? I know you guys have a kind of a global footprint as far as the things that you cover, but that's happening here.
Yeah, we try to we get some Chicago coverage in there because we are based in Chicago. So not too granular, but we definitely want to celebrate all things happening in this great food city.
Yep, it's cool to see some things happening on the food side, however it happens in this kind of weird pandemic version. So thanks, Marty. Thanks again. Get back to doing whatever it is that you were doing. And thanks so much for jumping on the show tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we are going to take a break, and we come back. Something that is happening related to schools and kind of an enhancement on the education side as far as things that are available, programs, and kind of a very thought-provoking initiative from Brenda Russell Williams called My GPS. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to have it with her. Keep it here. It's Dane on 720 WGN.